Talk is a weekly dose of inspiration and encouragement from the Tonic Health family and friends on topics such as mental health and well-being. Funded by the National Lottery Communities Fund. I'm Amber Sinclair, and I'll be your weekly host, taking you on a voyage of discovery and inspiration, exploring a wide range of mental health and well-being subjects with weekly guests who will share with us their advice, their knowledge, and maybe some ideas on the day-to-day issues we're all facing in a post-pandemic world. Our guest this week is relationships and dating expert Lily Walford. Now, if you've ever been in an unhealthy relationship, trust me, you're not alone. And I think Lily knows how to turn those negative experiences into a hopeful future for those of us who still want to be loved. So, hi, I'm Amber. And you must be Lily. And the producer's told me that we're going to get on like a house on fire. I think he said a house in fire, but I think that was a typo.
Love it.
He told me to be prepared. He said maybe get a bottle of wine on the go or something. He thought it'd be that sort of conversation. So tell me a bit about yourself. I mean, obviously, I've done my little bit of research, but I didn't want to do too much. So I wanted you to tell me and our listeners. This is our podcast is very much about, you know, listening to other people and what their advice is and things. So tell us about what you do.
Yeah, so I'm a relationship and dating coach with a twist, because we use something called behavioral profiling, which uses CIA level intelligence to be able to understand people at a deeper level. So we partnered up with someone called Chase Hughes, and that's got about $30 million dollars worth of government research behind him, basically. Yeah. And we get to use that in the dating industry.
Wow, but it sounds like criminology. Is that where this has kind of come from? Because dating profiling and you know, crime profiling, I would never have put them side by side. I mean, what are you looking for? You know, what?
Yeah. So this is kind of a little bit more about connecting with people at a deeper level. So it's more about understanding the body language that's going on. It's understanding the person's behavior from their needs and fears. So you can actually profile someone within 6 minutes or less to understand their needs and fears. And when you can start to understand that, you can understand their behavior and also who you're compatible with as well. So who you're really going to connect with. So I think for us, we're kind of repurposing a lot of this to be able to help people to have real, honest and genuine connections that last.
Okay. But what if you get somebody and you profile them? I'm thinking about me. And you realize that actually deep down they're a narcissist and they're really not going to be. Is there someone for everyone?
Yes, I believe so. I think we can go through trends of, you know, meeting the wrong people. I don't think we necessarily attract a narcissist, but
I do.
I've been there. I've dated a few. And I think it's more about like it's kind of a little bit like a numbers game. But it's almost as well understanding the type of person that you're going to be compatible with and where you can find them and how you can recognize them. So, for example, with a dating profile, you can read so much from someone's dating profile and understand so much about that person, their lifestyle, their routine, all these different things. And even likewise, if you're going to go meet someone organically, you know, if you're thinking about your interests and the things that you really enjoy and the things that you're really passionate about and going around people like that, you're going to be able to meet people who are a little bit more in line with you.
You are, but I always find them very difficult dating websites. I was trying to write a biog of yourself, and I just think to myself on many levels, I'm not just what I am. I know what I am and I know what I like, but I'm open to stuff, you know, and I think potentially that's why I've always ended up picking up, you know, randoms that I've just then... I mean, we joke about it, but there is a side of those relationships. And personally, that's quite poignant for me, because I did have to come out of a quite horrible relationship, but I do tend to pick them. And I just keep thinking to myself, I keep doing this, you know, 4.5 years of therapy later, and I'm still picking them. How do we avoid that? And why do you think we attract a certain type of person?
Yeah, so I think with narcissists in particular, so we've actually developed a course of Chase Hughes on narcissism. And it's really, really interesting because we assume that, again, it's our fault and we get wrapped in. But the truth is, they're so charismatic and they know how to use empathy. So one thing that's quite interesting about narcissists is the empathy part of the brain is actually underdeveloped. So where this is where, you know, they can do things that are, you know, seemingly really bad, and they don't quite understand how bad something is, and also how they can actually start to manipulate people into doing things that they wouldn't necessarily do, and it feels out of character. So a lot of work that we do is kind of around helping people heal from that, because it's a form of trauma, and also it's a form of cult programming as well. So they actually, you know, we refer to, you know, narcissistic relationships as a two-person cult, because there's so much influence going on. And also what you tend to have is you have such high highs where basically when people say the right things to us or treat us in a certain way, our brains will release a serotonin, which is more addictive than a class A drug, that will make us feel good. And then that will keep us going when we go through the lows as well. So we're kind of going through this thing of like massive withdrawal and suddenly craving that relationship. And that's how we end up staying in there. So it's almost, so what tends to happen, it's almost like a boiling frog kind of scenario.
A boiling frog.
Yeah. Have you never heard of this?
No. Go on.
If you've got a frog and put it in a boiling pan of water, it would jump straight out. It'll go, stop that. I don't want to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. But if the frog's in a nice lukewarm kind of temperature and it's nice and, you know, it's just comfortable and slowly that temperature goes up and up and up and up and up. And before he knows it, he's stuck in the water and he's, you know, boiled alive basically. And this is what tends to happen in those relationships. They never start off bad. They never start off in this, you know, terrible, terrible way. But there are a few things that we can actually look out for in the very beginning to see if someone is narcissistic or not.
Which is probably the most helpful. The boiling frog's brilliant. I like the boiling frog. That's true. I'm definitely been a frog. I've definitely, definitely been the frog. But I got to a point where I just said no. There was, I found out, you know, the truth, that it had all been a lie and blah, blah, blah. And I just threw him out straight away. But that's not normally how domestic situations go, is it? I mean, obviously I felt the boiling coming and I've just drawn a line under it. But yeah, I'm still vulnerable to meeting those people. So what are we looking for then?
Yeah, okay. So there's a few things here as well. I'm thinking, oh, okay. So when we have a look at a narcissist, if you are on a date and you're telling someone such a sad, 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 sad story, okay, or something that's really happy, we're looking for that empathy. We're looking for that empathy on the face. Are they mirroring our facial expression? Are they in the emotion with us? Because people, like I said, narcissists, they have that empathy part of the brain. It's underdeveloped, so they're unable to actually do that. But what they can do is they can mimic it for a little while, and then it drops off the face. A little bit like, you know, when we smile at someone that we don't like.
Yes.
give them a smile and then they turn their head, it's like, bam, gone. You know, that's the kind of thing that we're looking for with narcissists. Because they're doing it from a mimicking place, not from an authentic place. Other things that we can look out for is have a look at the conversation. Is the conversation flowing where they're starting to understand you? Are they asking questions about you? Or is it somehow always coming back to them? You know, do you turn around and say, oh, yeah, well, I broke my finger. And they go, oh, that's nothing. I've broke my leg. You know, are they actually turning it around back to them constantly? Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of an obvious sign of narcissism, isn't it? If you're not looking for it, if you're not wary, I suppose you wouldn't notice, would you? You just carry on talking.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is the important part. It's the awareness. It's like we don't get taught that there's these type of personality types that can be quite damaging out there. You know, we have, especially as empaths, we want to believe that everyone's got our best interests at heart. You know, we want to believe that side of things. So, and especially when we're in that dating stage, we don't go on a date thinking, oh gosh, it's going to end and it's going to be terrible and this person's not right. But it's kind of like bringing just that awareness to the forefront. And I think as well, another great sign is accountability. Is that person accountable for their actions, for their words, and for their emotions? Because a narcissist will always make excuses for themselves. They'll always say, well, it was your fault, or you made me do that, or so-and-so, they just don't understand how brilliant I am. You know, it's kind of that kind of thing. They've got, just no sort of concept of being accountable for anything that they've done wrong.
That's an interesting one, because I swore after this last relationship, and I don't have one a week. I mean, it's only my second one, you know, it's relationship in the 11 years since I've been a single mum. But it was very much I said I'd never date somebody again that blamed their ex and talked about their ex all the time. It was always that blame of, oh yeah, my last relationship broke down, oh yeah, she was a nutter, oh, and then my last one, she's a nutter and she won't let me see my child and blah blah blah. And I was always trying to be that person that she wasn't. And I think that is, there's an inherent need there, isn't there, to be a better partner. Just like when you go to the hairdressers, they always go, oh, you know, you go to the new and they go, oh, yeah, I don't like what she's done here. You know, you can always try and improve, don't you, on the last one.
Yeah.
That's not helpful, is it?
It's a great way to manipulate. Look, this is how I expect you not to be if you want to stay with me.
Didn't think of it like that. Yes, I suppose that is exactly what they're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going, here's my rule book. This is what I expect. Comply, comply, comply. So we're always looking for that manipulation and control from the very beginning. And I think another one to add on that is not being able to take no for an answer. That's something that they really, really struggle with. So even if it's just like, no, and you can see it's an obvious no, and it makes sense, they will bash against it just because they're looking for that control.
And I suppose on a very serious and delicate note, this is how physical abuse happens, and particularly sexual abuse happens, because it's that need to control. And don't get me wrong, I didn't go through anything compared to what millions of women go through all the time. Mine was majoritively financial, but it's the lying and the manipulation that I just hit me so hard. I can't believe I was so vulnerable.
It's the betrayal. I think the sad thing is, you know, healthy relationships, you always have collaboration, compatibility, communication, and consideration. And it's like when you've been all those things to that person and they haven't met you for where you're at, they're from the same side, that's when it's hard. And it's even harder when you thought they met you at that stage and they haven't.
Or they've been pretending they have. That's the hardest thing. They tend to be good actors.
Yes.
I even know that he's gone on to be with somebody else and she actually approached me. So what do I need to know? And I laid it on the line, you know, quite matter of fact, that I'd had the police involved and everything. She just said, no, I've been in a domestic abuse situation before and I don't believe it. You know, either that or he's like an Oscar winning actor, because he's just not like that at all.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah. He doesn't appear to be, you know, to start off with. So what do we do? What do you do specifically? Say somebody comes to you. I've had a quick look at your website and it's like, book a free appointment. Just, you know, is this all in 6 minutes? Can you analyse in 6 minutes? And
so much that you can do. Yeah. I think the most important part is the healing process. So I've been working with so many women over the last coming up 3 years of helping them overcome that past relationship to start off with. Because what we don't realize is when we've gone through a narcissistic relationship, your thoughts aren't your own. You go through the brain fog. You go through the situations of, oh gosh, do I buy that pint of milk or that pint of milk? And you go through like the 5 minute debates of like wondering which one to go through when it's the simplest of decisions to make. We also go through the internal dialogue of remembering certain things, negative things that they said in order to sort of, you know, put you down. So a lot of it is actually unprogramming the processes that have been going on, unpicking the things that have had you manipulated in those scenarios, and then getting you to the point where you're free from that and you can actually say, right, what is it that you want? What is it that's really going to make you feel excited and happy in life, whether it's being single, whether it's being in a relationship, whether it's, you know, you know the type of relationship that you want, and that's where you can build from.
So you've got to know, it's a cliche, isn't it? I suppose it's what we're always told. Until you know yourself, you know, you can't really give yourself, you know, share that with somebody. And that's so true. Do you have success with everybody?
Yeah, I think it depends what everyone wants. I think, you know, we have some people who, for example, one lady, she was in a relationship or she was married to someone for 26 years. And you think about that level of kind of the program. So we have people like her who just want to be able to learn to be on their own afterwards. And that's okay. Mm. We have some people who've actually come to us when they're married and say, look, I've just gone through a narcissistic relationship. I've got married to this person, but there's things that are playing out from that previous relationship, or I don't know how to co-parent with my ex in order to move on and enjoy that relationship. Some people we have, go through narcissistic relationships and want to go ahead and meet someone new, and that's exactly what we do. So it depends on what everyone wants, but I think when we're actually in a place of uncertainty and we've gone through that place of betrayal and we've gone through that place of not understanding which thoughts are our own and what makes us happy because we've put that person first all the time, you know, that's the place to build upon, because otherwise you're building with, you know, their old tools for a relationship you probably don't want.
And you find yourself trying to always compare, almost like, so that you don't make the same mistakes again. But actually I found that I just keep making the same mistakes again, you know. It's not that it's as obvious as, you know, I keep going for people that put me down. I wouldn't be with somebody who I was conscious was putting me down. I just wouldn't.
As
I found out about it, he was gone, you know. There was no way, you know, can I just stay the night on the same? No, gone, out, you know, you've done it. But it sneaks in, and because you've got all this, I was going to call it damage. Now, I really like the fact that you called it programming, because it's much more helpful. And obviously you are looking at it from a very positive point of view. This is a great service that you have found that niche for, that people really need. And it's almost like it's reprogramming rather than, I always think of it as baggage and damage, you know, and it's not, it wasn't our fault. It's like we've collected it on purpose, you know. We made those choices, and therefore it's your fault. And you keep going around the same cycle, don't you? Yeah. And what you're doing is you're breaking the cycle, I suppose.
Yeah, I think this is the thing, you know, when people have gone through that, it's so easy for us to sort of blame ourselves, shame ourselves. And it's like, well, actually, you've just shown up as the person who's been able to love someone and it hasn't been returned in a healthy way. You know, and I think the important thing, that one of the reasons why I went down this route, is when I had a relationship breakdown and I went to a coach, it was so much like, okay, just get out there, get on a dating site, go meet someone new. And it was like, hang on, I've got all this, like you said, baggage from all this previous relationship. I don't even want to let someone, that close anymore. No. I want to hold someone at arm's length. And it made me realize that how many people as well are going into relationships where it's like, okay, if I brought your perfect partner to you right now, are you ready for them? And it's like, if you're not in that place to enjoy it and to actually enjoy yourself and actually enjoy being in love, then you're missing out.
Oh, I know I'm missing out. Trust me, you know. But how many people are, you know, oh, you need to get out there, you need to go and you need to meet somebody. And I always say, he's too nice. He's too good for me. He's too nice for me. Yes. Not good for me as in it would be lovely to have someone who was good for me and who brought out the best in me. But I just, I'm not attracted to. Yeah. Isn't that a problem? Is that because of my programming?
I think it's so easy to sort of over analyze things when we're sort of looking for what we want. Because I think it's important to have that attraction. I think it's important to have that compatibility. And I think it's important to also be with someone who's emotionally available to be with. And I think, I think it's not so much of like, oh, I can't find the right one, or I can't meet someone who I'm attracted to. I think it's kind of realizing, like, the recognizing the people that are right for you. And also going back to, okay, you don't have to do everything online, because online it's like rummaging through TK Maxx, you know.
Oh, it is. And that's really difficult. I'd always walk out empty handed at TK Maxx.
Exactly. I think it comes back to, you know, what are you doing when you're living your best life? Yeah. You know, I know lockdown's been going on, but we're coming out of that soon. So it's like, okay, well, what are you doing to live your best life? Who are you, you know, where are you? What are you doing? And I think it's allowing yourself to go into that mode to say, right, you know, I've always wanted to go and take up pottery, for example. Great, go and do some pottery. And actually be able to put yourself out there and meet people. Because I think the more things that you're doing when you're, you know, doing things that you feel interested in, you feel happy and you feel alive, that's going to be the time when you're most attractive. And also you're going to be surrounded with people who've got those similar interests. You know, whether you go to a room and, you know, go to a workshop and realize, oh, God, it's just full of women. Doesn't matter. You know, you're still going to make friends. You're still going to have evenings out and things like that that you can do through them as well. So I think there's so much opportunity, but I think it's kind of putting yourself in that right place to be able to actually enjoy that and make the most out of that as well, whilst also living your life without having the feeling the need to wait around for someone.
It does sort of feel like that. I think that comes from a very early age, doesn't it? Where, you know, I mean, I chose to be a single mum, and I knew that's what I wanted. And I will say quite openly to anyone that asks or that talks about relationships or dating or so-and-so's brother's coming around for tea, you should meet him. I'm not interested. I've got George and I'm just happy just being, because everything's been a disaster so far. It's a lie. It's an utter lie. Deep down in my gut, I want to be in a relationship, but I don't want to be in a relationship like I've experienced so far.
Yeah.
So what do you do with someone like me? I think I'm the problem. You know, I genuinely do. It was interesting. You said, what did you say? Emotionally available. Because I've met people in the right. I met the perfect, you know, on paper, the perfect partner. We'd known each other for years, musician. We'd worked on a show together. So I was in the right place to meet the somebody. We had exactly the same interests. But what was it about me that made him think this one's going to be, this is what it feels like. It feels like this one's going to be manipulatable. Manipulatable, is that a word?
We'll go with it. It sounds
we'll go
good.
With it. I'll Google it. Is that me?
I wouldn't say that it's, I think this is the thing, you know, why are we blaming ourselves for someone else's actions? You know, I think there's this great little story that my mum came out with around my granddad. He'd always go to the corner shop and he'd go and get some donuts. He'd call them Duff Nuts. And, you know, he went to the shop, opened the door, and this lady walked out. And she's turned around to him and said, I hope you didn't open the door because I'm a lady. And he goes, no, I held it open because I'm a gentleman. And it's like, I think when we can be in that place to actually act within our own integrity, And also, when we actually allow ourselves to listen to that voice inside us, because what we tend to find as well, even from the very beginning, we feel something and we go, do you know what? This isn't right. But what happens is when we're children, when we have that feeling for the first time, and we go, do you know what, Mum, I really don't like Uncle David, for example. And she could turn around, you know, she turns around and goes, oh, don't be so silly, he's your uncle, he's family, he's fine. And we learn then from that point, any feelings that we have, oh, do you know what, you're just being too harsh, give him a chance, rather than actually listening to that voice and going, this isn't right.
Yeah. But when you are, and it's a horrible word because it's something I would never admit to being, but when you are desperate, as in when you are longing for, you squash that voice because you are desperate for it to work. How do we then know from the off? Because once you're in there, this is the trouble. But I love him or I love her. How do we know from the very, very beginning? I know you've spoken about kind of like those warning signs right at the beginning, but is there anything else? Are there other things that we can look for?
Yeah, I'd say it's the moment where we don't grow anymore. As soon as we don't grow, we know we're not in the right place. A relationship is a place where you can grow as an individual and also grow as a couple. And I think the moment that that's taken away.
Yes, wow, that resonates. I hope it does the same with other people that are listening, because nobody's hit that nail on the head like you have there. Very interesting. You giggle. Are you not? You seem to be like, it's just so simple, and people realizing it. I suppose you're just like, to you, it's like, this is obvious.
I've been there. I've done the whole overanalyzing. I've done the whole, I think with me, I've always had a fascination with like the fairy tale kind of love and anything that looks remotely similar to that. You know, it's like, oh yes, I'll go for that. That's great. Yeah. You know, I've been in situations where I've gone off on, you know, been taken off on 10-day holiday and 10-day holidays to Dubai and things like that, you know, thinking, oh yeah, I'm a princess. That's great.
Yeah.
I totally get it. When we kind of want to be in that place and believe, it's like, yeah, it's hard in that place to let it go. And I think it's funny sort of like learning everything that I've learned so far and seeing people in a very similar place to where I was and kind of being able to hear the things that I needed to hear back then in order to grow and move forward. So it's just nice to be able to kind of give that back.
And you communicate it so well. I don't feel like I should have known that before, you know, which is, again, I know I don't want to go into any major detail about victim support, but it's not very helpful. I just, you know, the judicial system doesn't support you in a domestic you know, violence, domestic abuse situation, and then the victim support really isn't up to it.
Yeah, I think this is hard because I think when you've gone through a narcissistic relationship and you're speaking to someone who's only ever gone through a breakup, just a normal breakup with just someone who's healthy and it's been fairly amicable, they're not going to understand the kind of manipulative brain that kind of happened, you know, what happens within that person.
How clever they are as well.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's hard for people to kind of understand that if they haven't gone through it. And I think another part of it as well is I have found that there's so much blame on the person who's gone through it, which I think is sad. Because, I mean, for example, I spoke to one lady, and she was told by a counsellor that the reason she got into that scenario with a narcissist is because that she was addicted to love. She was addicted to, and I'm thinking, like,
how
everyone's
is that helpful?
Everyone's addicted to love. Everyone's driven for connection. You know, if we didn't have love or connection in our life, oh my gosh, you know, that would just be, you know, mental health problems all over the freaking place. You know, we're all driven for it. And I think, you know, when we start blaming people for being a victim of someone's manipulation, I mean, for example, if you had someone go to a cult and come out of a cult, would you go ahead and blame them for going ahead and joining that cult? You know, it's like that person's been suckered in, they've been programmed and, you know, and cast aside to come out. You know, is it really their fault for being dragged in? And I think this is like the, you know, can feel a little bit of a grey area. But I think when you've got people who know what they're doing, they know that they're charismatic, they know how to say the right things, they know how to get that attention, you know, and that's what they've been doing all their life because that's how they see how they can use people. I mean, remember, narcissists, they don't have empathy, so they see people as resources. You know, how can I get something out of you? How are you valuable to me? Whether it's status, whether it's just feeling good, whether it's the words of affirmation that they kind of need to hear. You know, you're not seen as a person. So I think
you're an entity for them to be able to survive.
Exactly. You're their life support. And I think this is the thing that people don't quite understand. People don't see that.
No. So by helping people to see that, I suppose part of that is creating. I've always said, you know, I was a victim for a while. I'm not a victim anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm a survivor. But, you know, I suppose it's getting people from victim to survivor and then reprogramming. And yeah. And you do all of that. You do all of that with you. That's amazing. You don't look old enough to know enough to be able to do all of that. My therapist was like 60 something and I trusted her because she was, you know, I thought, where have you been around the block? You know what you're doing. You're so young.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, but
I'm not sure that was a thank you. I think that was a bit of an insult, actually. I didn't mean it like that. But you've studied this
intently. Yeah, very, very much so. I think for me, a part of my healing journey was understanding the ins and outs of how this happened. Because I think when you start to understand how everything happened and how everything unfolded, it's almost like being given a Rubik's Cube and being able to put the colours right.
To solve it.
Mm. Yeah. Because what tends to happen otherwise, if you have things that are left unsolved, you have something called the Zeigarnik effect. Mm-hmm. So what this is our thoughts come up like, oh, do you remember that text message? Or that must have been sent from so-and-so. Or do you remember this? Do you remember that? And it's kind of bringing in all these different things to go, oh, this is why it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And it's because the reason they come up and they keep going and, you know, coming and coming is because we're trying to solve the problem. So once we've solved that Rubik's Cube, we can let it go and we can go, okay, well, that's what's happened. This is how I avoid it and this is how I move forward.
And that's a big thing. And I found that particularly with poor mental health and people that are, again, it's a phrase, but stuck in a rut. It's mm-hmm. about knowing what to let go of, isn't it? And because you can say, well, just let it go. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, thanks to Disney, it's a very famous phrase, you know, just let it go. But it's not that easy. You've got to know what you're letting go of.
I think it's even deeper than that. I think it's like the difference between talking to the conscious and subconscious mind. So, you know, when we're driving and it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I've got to my destination, but I don't remember taking that turning or that turning.
Yes.
It's like it's on an autopilot. Yeah. If we suddenly go, oh, do you know what? I'm going to go on a diet on Monday. I'm not going to eat this. And all of a sudden it's like all the thing you can think about is that bloody bar of chocolate in the back of the cupboard.
Yes.
Yeah, and this is exactly the same thing. And I think, you know, I think talking therapy and things like that, I think is great. I think it has its place. But I think for people to be able to move forward, they need to know what to do next. And I've had so many people come to me who've been to, you know, psychotherapists and counsellors and, you know, all these different people who they've gone to for support. And then they've said, yeah, I got to talk, but after the time's up, I didn't know what to do next. Or I was stuck in that horrible fuzzy thing of reliving that past. And it's like, okay, well, we actually need to be able to give people that action plan to say, right, this is what happened. Here's the information so you know what happened. You can overlay it to your story of what happened, and you can actually give yourself a bit of compassion to say, do you know what, I did everything I could to love that person and give them everything, but they weren't in the place to give me what I needed. And from that place, we can actually let go.
So how do you access that subconscious?
So there's a few different ways. You can obviously do it through hypnotherapy. That can be such a great way. My favorite way is through coaching. I love being able to ask people the questions that they haven't been asked before.
Okay.
Because the deeper you kind of go, because what we tend to do when we get to pain, when we get to any kind of emotional pain, we go, oh no, I don't want to dive into that. It's like, oh, okay, that's the painful bit. Yes, okay, I'll leave that. I found that bit, great. Rather than going, okay, well, what's through that? Let's actually go a little bit deeper. Let's go underneath that. It's almost like going, okay, when you talk to someone who's about to break up, it's like, okay, so the worst thing that could possibly happen is that you can break up. What happens after you break up? And what happens after that? And what happens after that? And what happens after that? Because usually we just get stuck at the breakup. And it's not about what's actually after that. What's the future element that you're actually going to be able to enjoy afterwards? So it's pushing through that pain to find what's the good bits through that that's going to actually help you to move forward.
So how do we tap into that? You mentioned hypnotherapy.
Yeah, so we do NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, and we also do hypnotherapy. And I think what I love to use this for is actually going to parts of like childhood and actually understanding the connections there. There's a huge, huge correlation between our childhood and the way that we connect with people. Like huge. And it's the way that we can express love, the way that we can express empathy. A part of the program that I take people through, we actually understand people's love styles and also the way that their behavior is when they're in relationships. So what's their type kind of a style?
Wow. So, your love style.
Yeah.
That's random.
And it's so important to understand, because we have some people who find when they're in relationships, they tend to feel angry. We've got some people who are in relationships, they tend to go up and down and they flip all over the place. We have some people who try to avoid the emotions. We have some people who try to control the relationship in some sort of way. And it's understanding these kind of patterns and understanding what's underneath them to be able to, you know, what's underneath them that needs healing in order for them to be able to be present and enjoy that relationship as well.
Yeah, and is part of being, is a love style being kind of too, can you be too malleable? You know, you always wanting to please, I suppose.
Yeah, that's another one.
You're always wanting to make it work.
Yeah, that's another style, another... The pleaser style. So they tend to actually do everything they possibly can, then realize they don't get anything in return, then resent that person afterwards.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So, and that tends to come from childhood, where you are looking to please a certain parent, either both parents or one parent in particular.
Are you telling me that I can put my absolutely disastrous life down to my parents? Because that would be great. Then neither of them are with us any longer, so we can blame my parents.
I think it's important when we actually have a look at childhood, because, you know, I had a great childhood. But when I have a look at, you know, the parenting styles, I notice, okay, well, this is actually how it's actually influenced my love life. And it's not to say, oh, well, that they're bad parents,
no.
You know, because at the end of the day, you know, parents do the best they bloody can. I mean,
okay, yeah, yeah.
I felt sorry for my parents.
Oh, I definitely felt sorry for my parents, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's sort of going, well, they did the best they could in those circumstances. And the truth is, it doesn't matter what childhood you have, whether it's great or whether it's bad, you never come out unscathed. So I think that's really important to know. So, yeah, you're going to have one of those certain love styles, and your one happens to be the pleaser.
Well, you say that, you see, I might be completely wrong, and that's where I'm going wrong, because I certainly, if I could understand myself better, I don't think I'd be able to fall into these dreadful relationships quite so happily. It's almost like I attract, the wrong sort of people. But it is that, isn't it? It's that what you're doing, developing, like you say, by getting to know that person and recognizing that style. Again, it's knowing what the fix-its are, knowing what the next steps are to complete that Rubik's Cube. I like the Rubik's Cube analogy. I'm going with it. That's preferable to a boiling frog, but I do get the relevance of both.
I think one thing that we do as well is we actually take people through a process where they can actually figure out how they're manipulated as well.
That would be so interesting. Oh, God, I need to come see you, Lily.
It's so good, because I think when we actually know how it can be used, we're more aware. So even if it's going to, buy a car or something like that, and you've got this car salesman trying to press you into stuff, you can see what lands and why it lands. And also, even with relationships as well, I think, and even in terms of personal development, you can see what's actually going to motivate you and how to tune into that element as well.
So I think that's really important on many levels, not just in relationships, to know, like, well-being, we're all trying to, I try every day to improve my well-being, but there's certain things I know, if I want to, have a better quality of life, if I got outside and exercised every day, I know that that's good for me. But there are other things that, are supposed to be helpful that doesn't do it for me. And everyone's different, yeah. Aren't they?
Yes.
And to know for somebody to say, I tell you what would get you going, and not just, because this is what we generally call well-being. You personally, tell you what motivates you, it's this, because then when you're stuck in a bit of a rut, you can go, I know what I need. I need to do that,
Exactly. And this is like funny thing that tends to come up when we're doing coaching, especially when we've gone through like the deprogramming of a narcissistic relationship. Because usually, myself included, actually, you end up taking a different career path.
Oh, really?
Like, all of a sudden you just realize, okay, well, I've got something that, feels more aligned to me. By finding out the things that make you feel happy and helping you to sort of actually move forward. And I think when you actually find that purpose within yourself, where you find something that actually lights you up, not only are you allowed to kind of let go of that old relationship, but you're excited to be able to move forward with something that you're passionate about.
To move on and to do something productive, and it be that getting into another relationship or be that a career. That really does resonate. How did you get into all of this? Where did this come from? I'm going to be a life coach. I love life coach.
Well, originally I was an accountant, so I actually worked for Fortune 500 companies. At one point I was looking after 16 different companies across Europe. For a Fortune 500 company. So this was completely not on my radar at all. So it actually happened when I went through a breakup, and I thought I had the perfect relationship. I thought, I had a great, great guy who's very successful. We had a beautiful 4-bedroom house that was detached in a beautiful place in Cardiff. We had 2 brand new Mercedes on the drive. I thought it was like, yes. I mean, I was 25, or 20. No, I think I was younger than that. 20. Yeah, somewhere around that, 24, 25. Yeah. And that was my life. And I thought, well, there you go. I know what we're doing in the future. We've got all these awesome plans. And all of a sudden I've got home and got this message going, we need to talk. So within that weekend, I kind of sort of lost the relationship, lost my hat, lost my home, lost, I didn't lose my car, I love my car.
You kept the car. Fabulous.
I love cars. And it got me, I remember sort of sitting on the kitchen floor trying to, you know, grab out all the different things that were mine and, you know, trying to pack all those different things up and just thinking, flipping heck, if I'm leaving this life that I thought I loved, I know for a fact I'm going to go into something that's going to be better. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I know that I need to do that for me.
Hmm.
And from that, I got a life coach. And
okay.
Started to learn more about that. Then within a year, I was still working full time. I became an NLP practitioner, a master practitioner, a coach, a hypnotherapist, a public speaker, an NLP trainer, and I set up a business and I had an operation on my shoulder as well.
Oh my God.
So that was pretty much my year of like, okay, bam, just go ahead and do that.
And
the rest is history, basically. Suddenly decided that I wanted to go into the niche of, you know, relationships. And it was actually learning that at the time, it's probably a little bit more now, but at the time it was two women every week were getting killed by their partners' next partners. And which terrified me because I went through quite an abusive relationship before the relationship I just spoke about. And I was stalked for 5 years after when that relationship ended. So I just wanted to sort of learn, like, okay, how to stay out of those bad relationships, but also how to keep people safe.
Hmm.
I think, you know, it's not just about meeting someone who's going to be right for you, but also dating in a way that's going to keep you just safe and safe around the right, you know, but so you can be vulnerable around the right people. I mean, there was that horrible case in New Zealand. I can't remember the girl's name, but she texted her mum saying, oh yeah, I've just met this guy, he's really, really nice. And he strangled her by the end of the night.
Mm.
You know, it's like, so it's being able to see beyond that mask of what people are allowing you to see.
Mm. And I suppose that gives you all sorts of skills in life as well. You must be kind of, you know who you would work well with, for example. You know who to have on your team, who to support you emotionally, who really you don't need to know, you know, you don't want to support them emotionally. I think that comes, do you know what? I'm going to sound really old now, Lily. I think it does come with age as well.
Yeah.
You do learn, but a lot slower than the way that you could help. So, oh, if I could only live my 20s again with the knowledge I've got now, you know, and you're offering people that insight, really, aren't you? I am so tempted as well, and I might be crazy, but I think I should come and see you and then we'll do an update.
Oh my gosh,
I don't know whether any of the listeners are the remotest bit interested in my love life, but for want of a better victim, that's not the word I mean. Sorry, not victim, client, I suppose, you know. We could come back in like, you know, months time and I'm in this loving relationship. I mean, I have to say, I'm skeptical. I think I'm beyond help.
Do you know what? Really, I can totally understand why you feel skeptical. I was exactly the freaking same.
Were you?
Yes. I literally have to hold everyone at arms like, no, go away.
I hold everyone at arm's length except when a narcissist comes near and then he goes, you know what you need to do? You need to just let someone in and of course it's them. That's the problem, isn't it? You know, that's where they're there for you in the way that you think you need.
Well, yeah, it's do you know what, narcissists are so clever. When I first started, I come up with this thing called mice.
Okay.
And it was manipulate, so the way that they can manipulate your mind.
Uh-huh.
Then the next one is isolate. They make it really difficult for you to be able to enjoy time with family and friends, because if the more isolated you are, the more malleable and more controllable you are. And then the next one is control. And this is more about physical control, stopping you from actually physically from doing things. And then the other one is ego. you know, the fact that they need their ego boosted up all the time.
Constantly.
Yeah. I mean, even covert narcissists are very, very interesting because they kind of go under the radar. And what they tend to do is they like to be seen as the hero. This is how I've saved someone. This is how I've done things. Do you know what? I don't feel like a good person. And they're looking for that reassurance to go, oh, no, you are a great person. Yeah. You're great. You're this, you're that. And that's kind of how it goes under the radar. It's quite funny because, you know, when you're in those kind of relationships, it's so hard to see it. And we always find that people only notice that they're in a narcissistic relationship or an abusive relationship when they actually come out of it and they're okay to actually process it, where they're safe enough to process everything that's gone on.
Well, I was going to say that about isolation. I think it's important to weigh up as well that isolation doesn't have to be physical isolation. Mm-hmm. It's actually emotional isolation as well, yeah. Because you feel like you can't share how you're feeling with anybody else.
Yeah.
That's a massive thing, because I wasn't isolated from actually seeing people, but I suddenly realized that if I wasn't able to talk about him or the relationship or how I was feeling to anybody,
yeah,
because I felt guilty about doing that, because yeah. I knew that's not what he wanted me. He didn't want me to share that with people, and I think I should. That was my warning sign very early on, because there was no way he could have physically stopped me, you know, going out with my friends or whatever. But for example, he used to say he'd come with me. Oh, I'll drive.
Yes. Exactly.
So I wasn't being isolated from my friends. I was still seeing my friends, but he made sure he was there.
But it's a form of control. The funny thing is, my sister's partner did something very, very similar. You know, I'd be having a video call and he'd be sitting in the back corner.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, cool. It was just like, okay, I'm here. You can't talk about me. And this is the way I can influence that discussion.
They're terrified as well, aren't they? Very, very they're terrified of being found out, and they're victims. They believe they are victims. I think that's where the problems come. Could you help a narcissist?
Yeah, I think this is the interesting part, because it comes down to that empathy. And it's saying, okay, well, what's the benefit to them of being helped? And I've known people who have. I've known a couple of narcissists who've gone ahead and got help. But the thing that's missing is that empathy piece. And that's something that's always going to be missing.
So it's like a mental health disorder, schizophrenia or bipolar. It's actually there's just something that's not wired correctly or helpfully.
And it's like... it's like the difference between being an actor and playing the part and genuinely feeling it.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to be told that you're loved, or do you actually want to feel like you're being loved?
And again, I think that comes from their childhood, potentially, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So empathy, when we're taught empathy as children, we mimic our parents' facial expressions.
Yeah.
So when we're missing a part of that, when we're missing that level of development, we're missing that empathy part from our life. So that empathy part of the brain that it needs to grow between the ages of 0 and 7, when that hasn't grown during that time, the neuroplasticity stops. And that's why you can't learn that level of empathy through adulthood. You can mimic it, but you can't learn it.
That's really interesting. That plasticity, like you say, it's those early years when things grow and when the brain is wired, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's massive. Wow. Well, I think we should go ahead. I'm going to book an appointment with you, and I'm going to talk to you off the microphone. Obviously, we won't do it now. I don't think anyone needs to hear that, do they? But we can get together, and then we can come back. You see, in a few weeks or a few months, and we can talk again. And we don't have to talk about me necessarily, but maybe how
because I'm looking at it from a very kind of cold perspective, in as much as I don't know how it can help. Yeah. I don't, you know, I'm trusting that you do, because you've, you know, you see, you've told me so much already that's kind of, and I hope for our listeners as well, that something's resonated with them. And of course they can get in touch with you if they wanted to, if it was something that they're exploring. But I definitely would like to explore. It's been fascinating. And if people want to know more, you've got a website. We'll put all our details on the podcast.
Brilliant.
And they can get in touch with you. Or just maybe they've learned something about their relationships, a relationship they're in, or maybe a relationship they're looking for, just from some of the things you've said. If you can help just a few people be a bit less manipulatable. See, I'm still not sure about manipulable or manipulatable. Look it up. Yeah. But if we can help people to, you know, realize that maybe that, and I think a lot of it is the cause of poor mental health as well, and it can really, yeah, really affect us. So yeah, hopefully they'll reach out. I am going to reach out, Lily. So I will I'll fill my little form in online. Is that how it works? I go onto your website and book an appointment with you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So you can book any time. And also we've got loads of resources on there as well. So we've got a few blogs, we've also got some free trainings. So
you have a podcast too, do you not?
We do, yeah. So we've interviewed a few interesting people on there.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, we will make sure that we include all the details on the podcast information. I think that we've summed up your wonderful, wonderful service and what you do. I'm just so grateful you could come and tell us about it. Give us the insights you have. Thank you.
No, I've really enjoyed this, so thank you very much.
Oh, you're very, very welcome.
Well, I cannot wait to talk to Lily more about reprogramming my brain, so I might find a lifelong partner one day. Who knows? But for now, I must go. And I leave you with a message that Maz has left for us on our voice message button. And you can do the same. Yeah, it might be a story about a random act of kindness, or a poem, a song, or just your thoughts. And we might be able to share it on our podcast. So for now, it's goodbye. But please take care of yourselves and each other.
Hello, I'm Marion, otherwise known as Maz within Tonic Health. I'm a dementia support worker within the focus group team. The COVID pandemic last year was incredibly challenging for our group members and their carers, as the guidelines meant we could no longer meet as a group. In 2020, after a discussion with Michael, we decided on the 75th anniversary of VE Day to make surprise home visits to each member. We travelled throughout South Holland in a 1943 Willys Jeep, dressed in period World War II clothing, giving each a special commemorative tin of shortbread. We were welcomed with happiness and enthusiasm by everyone. We wanted our dear members to know that Tonic Health was still thinking of them.